Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At a rally yesterday, Donald Trump predicted a bloodbath if he doesn't win in November. He saluted January 6th insurrectionists, and he said some undocumented immigrants aren't people. The Biden campaign's communications director, Michael Tyler, is standing by with his reaction to all of it. Plus, Fani Willis gets to stay on the case in Georgia, but the drama eats up 2 whole months. Alvin Bragg is forced to delay a trial that was supposed to start a week from tomorrow in New York. And Trump-appointed Judge Aileen Cannon continues to slow walk things down in Florida. Andrew Weissman and Melissa Murray literally just wrote the book on the Trump indictments, and they're standing by to discuss that avalanche of legal news we got this week. Plus, it's election day in Russia, which means it's the perfect time to talk about brand new reporting on the former president's affinity for dictators. Jim Sciutto joins me on what he discovered about Trump's private comments on some of the worst actors in the world. So we were planning to start the show on all of the delays on the legal cases, and there are a lot. And we will spend time on that with two of your absolute favorite legal experts in just a little bit. But then, late yesterday afternoon, Donald Trump spoke at a rally in Ohio, and we decided we have to start here.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected... Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars.
It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That will be the least of it. Now, the Trump team quickly said last night, nothing to see here. He was just talking about the auto industry. Consider the full context, everyone. Otherwise, it's irresponsible. Well, if they want us to consider the full context, let's do just that. Because the full context is that Trump kicked off the same exact rally by saluting the people who were convicted for the deadly assault on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, all to the tune of the national anthem sung by a choir of imprisoned insurrectionists. The full context is that some of the first words out of Trump's mouth last night, same rally, were thanking those rioters and calling them patriots. The full context is that he also said in this same rally, quote, "If this election isn't won, I'm not sure that you'll ever have another election in this country." The full context is that he went on to say some undocumented immigrants are, quote, not people. And of course, the full context is that this is much bigger than one single speech. This embrace of political violence, this dehumanizing language, this is what Donald Trump has been preaching for years. In January, he warned that there will be, quote, bedlam in this country if his criminal prosecution derailed his campaign. Late last year, he echoed the dehumanizing language of Adolf Hitler, comparing his political opponents to vermin and saying immigrants are, quote, poisoning the blood of our country. Last month, he said there would be potential death and destruction if he was charged in the Manhattan criminal probe. And during his first term, he flat out refused to condemn the political violence at a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, saying there were very fine people on both sides. In 2020, he reportedly asked his defense secretary about shooting people who were protesting the death of George Floyd, saying, "Can't you just shoot them? Just shoot them in the legs or something." And of course, his very words inspired violence on January 6, 2021, when he told a crowd of his supporters to walk down to the Capitol and fight like hell because, quote, "You'll never take back our country with weakness." Trust me, I could go on and on and on. We all know by now that Trump's allusions to political violence are not merely rhetorical. His supporters take them literally. That's part of the big problem here. And he knows that, too. So, no, we did not miss the full context. This was not some meandering off-message comment. This is his message. As the Biden campaign put it, this is who Donald Trump is, a loser who gets beat by over 7 million votes, and then instead of appealing to a wider mainstream audience, doubles down on his threats of political violence. Joining me now from the Biden campaign is Communications Director Michael Tyler. Michael, thank you so much. I know we called you this morning and asked you to talk about this. I appreciate you taking the time. I wanted to just start. I mean, your statement from the campaign makes that very clear. It wasn't in your name, but the statement from the campaign makes very clear what the campaign was thinking. But when you heard the full context, when you saw those comments at that rally, what did you hear?
Well, thank you, Jen, for having me. I mean, what I heard was a continuation of the same rhetoric, the same endorsement of political violence that we've seen from Donald Trump for years, as you pointed out. It goes even farther back, right? This is the same guy who, after Nazis marched on Charlottesville and killed a woman, said there were very fine people on both sides. This is the same guy who, in 2020, told the Proud Boys, a white supremacist group, to stand back and stand by. And now, every single day on the stump, he is championing and praising the insurrectionists who he encouraged to violently storm the Capitol in an attempt to overthrow our democracy. So it's not simply one comment. This is exactly who Donald Trump is, and this is exactly the threat that he poses to our democracy every single day. I think the problem for Trump, though, is that the American people saw what happened on January 6th, and they've responded consistently since, right? They responded in 2022 when Democrats had the most successful midterm cycle for a Democratic incumbent since FDR. They continued to respond last year in states like Kentucky, Ohio, and Virginia in the fall elections then, and they're continuing to respond right now. That's why we're on our front foot heading into this general election, because the American people fundamentally understand, A, what Joe Biden has done to fight on behalf of the American people over the course of the last 3 years, but they see every single day now the threat that Donald Trump poses if he's able to regain power. He is talking every single day about tearing down the fabric of our democracy and enacting political revenge if he's able to serve on a dictator on day one, as he is promising to do.
I mean, the American people are smart, to your point. They've been watching him use this rhetoric consistently for months and years. You know, the Trump's team claim, which clearly I don't buy into, but I do want to ask you about, is that this is all in the context of a riff about the auto industry, which doesn't even entirely make sense, let me just say. But I think that I wanted to ask you about that and just what your thoughts are on that and their claim.
Yeah, I think the claim is nonsense, again, because this is a guy who every single day is talking about enacting political revenge, who every single day is praising political violence that we saw in 2020. So the idea that they're going to be able to spin their way out of this today is ridiculous, because every single day Donald Trump is promoting and endorsing and encouraging political violence on the stump. It's dangerous, but it is unpopular, and the American people continue to reject it. And so we're confident that we continue to contrast the violence, the danger, the chaos, the division that Donald Trump is preaching every single day on the stump against Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's positive vision for bringing Americans together in pursuit of progress. We're going to be successful, and the American people are going to continue to reject it. It's dangerous, but we have confidence in the decency of the American people to reject the extremism that we see from Donald Trump.
I'll also note the same people saying this is out of context have not condemned the other dozens of times he has made comments that prompt political violence and are politically violent rhetoric. Let me ask you, the president has been very vocal, forceful. I know
he's been doing it for years.
I mean, it's true. The president's been forceful out there. I mean, so forceful, the right wing's theory now is that he's on drugs, which is hilarious and crazy. But that aside, he's been very forceful in calling out and condemning Trump's language in recent weeks. He has been for years, but he's really upped it. Should we expect to hear him address this specifically out on the trail? I know he has a West Coast swing later this week.
Well, yeah, I think you actually heard the president say it even in going back to the State of the Union, right? Before Trump's latest comments, he said that political violence should be never acceptable in the United States of America. And so he's going to continue to do that. We've been carrying the same message forward since the State of the Union with an aggressive schedule. The president was in Pennsylvania. He was in Georgia, Wisconsin, and Michigan last week. He's headed out west to Nevada and Arizona this coming week, where he's going to continue to contrast these two fundamentally different visions for where we want to take this country. The president himself is talking about continuing to build on his historic record of accomplishment from 15 million jobs, 800,000 manufacturing jobs, lowering costs and delivering for the American people, and contrasting that against the chaos, the division, the violence endorsed by Donald Trump that he's promising to bring back to America if he's able to regain power. So that's going to be the contrast that the president continues to talk about on the stump, and that we'll continue to provide to the American people from now until November.
Sounds like we may hear more from him on this, no question. Let me ask you, Michael, about, I mean, former Vice President Mike Pence, former President Trump's vice president, everyone knows this, but it's worth repeating, announced he would not be endorsing Donald Trump. Just today, he said Donald Trump calling January 6th insurrectionists hostages is unacceptable. What is the campaign doing to use comments like those to your advantage?
Well, yeah, I think it's important to point out that Mike Pence's comments are simply the latest in a litany of the people who knew Donald Trump closest when he was in power in the Oval Office. So whether it's Mike Pence or Bill Barr or John Kelly, these are the people who worked with him every single day and know that he does not have the temperament, know that he does not have the judgment, know that he does not have the values to ever step foot in the Oval Office ever again. And I think it also speaks to the continued problem that Donald Trump has, given his inability to expand his appeal beyond the hardcore MAGA base. You look at Nikki Haley voters, for example, in states like Georgia or North Carolina or Virginia or Michigan, where Donald Trump continues to demonstrate an inability to go beyond the ceiling, right? He continues to struggle in key suburban counties that are going to be crucial towards the pathway to 270 electoral votes. So our message as a campaign is that if you share the same concerns that these people do, who understand the threat he poses to our democracy, who understands the threat he poses to progress, that there's a home for all of you in Joe Biden's campaign. So we're encouraging folks to go to joebiden.com, sign up, join our efforts, because it's going to take all of us to defeat Donald Trump once again in November.
Always a good plug there on the website, Michael Tyler. I know you and everybody's working so hard. Thank you so much for calling all of this out this morning. Really appreciate your time. And coming up next, from New York to Florida to Georgia, the delays in Donald Trump's criminal cases are piling up. Two of the very best legal minds are standing by to talk through all of the moving timelines. My guess is that Melissa Murray and Andrew Weissman will have a whole lot to say about the latest developments. We're back after a quick break.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
In a year that we thought would be full of back-to-back Trump trials, the delays are really piling up. In Florida, where Trump is facing federal charges of illegally retaining top secret documents, Judge Aileen Cannon did reject a motion to dismiss Trump's case this week, but she still hasn't set a trial date. In New York, Trump's criminal fraud trial was supposed to start a week from tomorrow, but has now been delayed until the middle of April, all thanks to a belated document dump from federal prosecutors. And finally, in Georgia, a dramatic legal sideshow is finally coming to a close after eating up 2 months. A judge ruled on Friday that Dee Fani Willis should not be disqualified because there was no actual conflict of interest brought about by her relationship with another prosecutor on the case, Nathan Wade. He said Willis could stay on the case as long as Wade resigned, which is exactly what he did just hours after the ruling. But the judge didn't exactly mince words either, describing their relationship as having a, quote, significant appearance of impropriety. Look, it doesn't make any of it fair at all, but we are operating in a world where this former president uses the courtroom and any wrinkle to his advantage in the public forum. Donald Trump is simply playing by a different set of rules. He's constantly pushing the legals of our legal system. To win in this world, in Trump's game that he's playing here, they have to be pretty perfect. And what we saw in Florida, Manhattan, and Georgia this week is that the system and all of its participants, from Judge Aileen Cannon in Florida to the prosecutors in Georgia to the DOJ document dump in New York, have not been perfect, that is. Joining me now is Melissa Murray, who's a former clerk to Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor and law professor at NYU, Andrew Weissman is the former general counsel at the FBI. They're also the co-authors of the brand new number one, congratulations, both of you, New York Times bestseller, The Trump Indictments. I have it right here with me, The Historic Charging Documents with Commentary. What a great, great book. There's so much I want to talk to you about, and Trump said some crazy things, so we don't have as much time with you as we normally would love to. But let me start here, because Andrew, you said Nathan Wade, of course, resigned, and as we know, after Friday, which means that Fani Willis can stay on the case. You said that she should recuse herself. Tell me more about why you think that. Do you still think that, and why you think that? Fani Willis, that is.
Sure. Well, I think one thing that's important to note is what the judge said about this conflict, which is that the defendants in this case were not prejudiced and are not prejudiced at all, meaning he really separated out this conflict issue from anything that the defendants can really complain about. And it's really important to remember that, because this is really two different stories. But unfortunately, you know, one affects the timing of the other. My biggest concern is not that Fani Willis needs to or is required to recuse herself. I was trying to figure out, where is this going to go from here? Mm-hmm. And the judge basically invited the parties, particularly the defense, to file all sorts of ethics grievances. So I just don't think we've heard the end of this, and that there will be other forums where this is going to be raised. I think it's also going to be raised, or they'll try to raise it on appeal. So I was really trying to put myself in her shoes and think about, what do you do that's sort of so that you don't become a lightning rod, so that you do what's in the best interest of the case. Again, it's not required. It doesn't have any prejudice, you know, to the defendants. But I was trying to think of what was best for the case. And so that's the reason I thought one way to deal with this is to have her simply say, you know what, my deputy, somebody else will oversee this.
You know, all of this is, it's not validating. It's not fair, as I said in the in the outset here. But this is such an important case because Trump can't delay it if he were to be elected. Melissa, let me ask you the same question. I mean, what do you think, if you're Fani Willis, you should be doing here?
So I think this may be a place, one of the few places where Andrew and I have a slight disagreement. I think, again, it was always going to be the case that Fani Willis would be targeted here. The effort to disqualify her was actually precipitated by a broader effort by GOP people in Georgia to limit her discretion as prosecutor. So she's been a target for a long time, and I think she'll continue to be a target. So whether or not she stays on this case, they're coming after her. And I think as a Black woman in that position, an elected position where she is supposed to represent the people of Fulton County, she has an obligation to see this case through, and she has the expertise to do so. And so, again, I think that there's chum in the water, certainly, and she is going to be a target going forward. But because there is no actual conflict of interest here, I think she should stay on.
Disagreement's healthy, by the way, especially among smart, really smart lawyers.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your book, guys, because, I mean, let me start with you, Andrew, because we're clearly seeing, of course, in all these cases, I mean, Judge Eileen Cannon in Florida and the Supreme Court are slow-walking things. There's no trial date in Georgia. The Manhattan case is delayed. None of these cases are working the way they should, I think it's fair to say. You can tell me if you disagree. And in your book, The Trump Indictments, you write about other countries that are able to bring their former leaders to justice, like in France, in Italy, in Argentina. Why are we as a country? I mean, we think of our judicial system as the best, right? Why are we seemingly unable to do this?
Well, you know, we have a former president who is facing 88 felony counts. And so he is now attacking the judicial system the way that he has attacked the media. He has attacked prosecutors. He has attacked people in Congress. So this is sort of the next check and balance that he is attacking. So, you know, that's as you pointed out in your first segment, he is now saying, you know, I'm all for criminals and we should, you know, we should release them. And that's what I'm going to do. So he's running very much as an outlaw. So you have, you know, this very strange position where you have a Republican running not as back the blue, but frankly, sort of back the orange. And I think that our country so far is not doing very well compared to the way other countries have held political leaders to account. You know, we think of ourselves as sort of American exceptionalism, that we do things the best. But this is one where we really should look globally to how other countries have dealt with the issue of corruption of our political leaders. because we are seeing sort of an erosion now in the final check, which is the judiciary, where, you know, some judicial officers are doing their job. But if you look at Judge Cannon, if you look at the slow walking in the Supreme Court, as Melissa knows, you know, very well and follows closely, you know, that is an area where we are seeing this erosion that puts us really not in a great light compared to other countries that have handled this much better.
Which is such an interesting point. And the 30 seconds we have left here, Melissa, I wish we had more time. We need to bag you guys back again together. What's one thing that would surprise people about this book? Maybe they're on the fence. Why should they buy it? Well, give us one more thing.
So I think one of the things that's really great about the book is we do put this in an international context. And as Andrew just said, one of the things that makes us different from these other democracies that have managed to prosecute and hold former leaders to account is that they had a judiciary that really played it by the book. Right now, we have a Supreme Court that has effectively given Donald Trump de facto immunity by delaying its consideration of the immunity issue until April 25th. That was not the situation in other advanced democracies where the judiciary really were a bulwark against the most authoritarian impulses of these former leaders, and they really helped call them to account. We're not seeing that here.
You both want me to go to law school. Thank you both so much for your time. Melissa Murray, Andrew Weissman, really appreciate it. And coming up, brand new reporting about Donald Trump's affinity for dictators, including his kind words about Adolf Hitler. Why this isn't a bigger story is completely beyond me, but we're going to spend some time talking about it. All of that reporting comes from a new book by CNN chief national security analyst Jim Sciutto, and we'll dig into all of it next. We're still awaiting the results of another sham election in Russia, but I don't think we're going to need Steve Kornacki at the big board for this one. It's pretty safe to say that Vladimir Putin is all but guaranteed to win a fifth term. That's the thing about autocratic regimes. There's not much suspense when the outcome is predetermined. Putin didn't face a credible opposition candidate, mainly because they're all either dead or imprisoned. He didn't face constitutional restraints like term limits, thanks to a dubious referendum in 2020. And he's engaging in pretty serious voter intimidation, forcing Ukrainians in Russian-occupied territories to literally vote at gunpoint. Additionally, if this is anything like Putin's last election 6 years ago, it is likely rife with fraud. That fraud was so brazen back in 2018 that cameras at polling locations captured several instances of people literally stuffing ballot boxes. But rather than condemn Putin for rigging that vote, then-President Donald Trump applauded his victory. And in doing so, Trump ignored warnings from his own advisors who explicitly told him, do not congratulate Putin. Pretty clear advice there. Direction. Of course, that's pretty telling in hindsight, given that Trump later tried to steal the election in this country. But it's also reflective of Trump's strange affinity for dictators like Putin, who is not only a destabilizing force in the world, but is literally trying to redraw the map of Europe right now. That dynamic is covered in a new book, The Return of Great Powers, Russia, China, and the Next World War, by Jim Sciutto of CNN. Among other things, he reports that Trump also praised the last European dictator who tried to redraw the map of Europe, revealing that Trump repeatedly expressed admiration for Adolf Hitler. That's according to Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, who said, quote, a second Trump term would be a fundamentally a catastrophe for us. I'm joined by now by someone who's covered the dynamics for years between global powers, CNN anchor and chief national security analyst Jim Sciutto. He's the author of the new book, The Return of Great Powers, Russia, China, and the Next World War. So, Jim, you have been covering, in addition to your excellent book you wrote, you've been covering these dynamics, these leaders for literally decades. And, you know, you talk in your book, obviously, and we've seen him do it publicly, how Trump echoed Adolf Hitler. He's done it many times. It seems clear that he admires people like Hitler, according to his advisors, and authoritarian leaders like Putin and Xi, in part because he sees them as strong, which you talk about. But as you well know from covering dictators, actually, they are not strong. They're weak because they want to hold on to power by suppressing opposition within the media, the judiciary. They want to suppress free and fair elections. How much do you see parallels in terms of the tactics Trump wants to use if he's reelected and sort of what some of these authoritarian dictators you write about in your book have done or tried to do?
And you're so right. It is false strength from Trump and from the despots that he admires. And General John Kelly, who, of course, was his chief of staff, mm-hmm. says as much. He says that Trump imagined himself as a strong leader, paralleled only by the strength shown by the Putins and the Kims and the Xi Jinpings of the world. And Kelly says this explicitly, imagines that based on nothing, because he said, in fact, during his time under Trump, he saw no evidence of that strength or confidence. But the trouble is, he does admire the extent of their power, right? Mm-hmm. And he does not want to be checked by Congress. He does not want to be checked by the courts. He imagines he deserves, in effect, unfettered power to the point. And Jen, I'm just amazed that we are talking about this, but it is fact. It's not coming from me.
Me too.
It's coming from someone who is in the mm-hmm. room with him, is when he uttered these words that he repeatedly praised Adolf Hitler, said that he did some good things, to which John Kelly says, what good things? And he said, well, he rebuilt the economy. He said, to then wage war against Europe, where 400,000 Americans died. He said, well, his generals were loyal to him, unlike you. You generals like you, General Kelly. Mm-hmm. And General Kelly had to say to him, one, his generals tried to assassinate him. But the thing is, this is a man, according to his own advisors, who mm-hmm. doesn't base his views on fact. He bases them on how he feels.
Or history, apparently. The piece of this that you also write about is kind of the suppression of opposition, right, is clearly a part of the tactics of authoritarian leaders and dictators. And, you know, earlier today, Trump was asked if Putin was responsible for the death of Alexei Navalny, who, of course, we all know as an opposition leader who was jailed and recently died in Russia. I want to play that for you and just get your thoughts on it.
Do you believe Vladimir Putin has some responsibility for the death of Alexei Navalny?
I don't know, but perhaps. I mean, possibly, I could say probably. I don't know.
I mean, it's not a partisan thing in any way to have watched this and watched Navalny's activism and the actions of Putin to think that clearly he had a role. But what were your thoughts when you watched that and his response?
The most consistent foreign policy position, one can say, with Donald Trump is his refusal really to criticize Vladimir Putin. And that goes back to his Helsinki moment regarding, you know, refusing to take U.S. intelligence community's assessment that Russia interfered in the election right up to this. I mean, it's been a month since Navalny died, and he has not uttered a critical word of Vladimir Putin. And the fact is, Jen, he knows better because Alexei Navalny, the first time Putin tried to get rid of him was during Trump's presidency in 2020, when Russian security services, it is the view of many intelligence services, attempted to kill Alexei Navalny with the most powerful nerve agent in the world. He amazingly survived. That was the first attempt. And Trump would have read the intelligence reports himself. And yet he gives that wishy-washy answer there, which is consistent. He will not criticize the man or really the country or its tactics. And it's quite an alarming thing, considering he is, you know, of course, running to be commander-in-chief once again.
One of the things, and we only have a minute left, but you're a professional. One of the things you talk about in this book is about the interconnectivity between these global powers. And you spent some time in China. And I wanted to ask you about what President Xi thinks when he watches the fact that Ukraine funding has not been able to move forward, the fact that Putin is a little bit unchecked here right now. What is he thinking?
Yeah. Well, in researching this book, and I went from Ukraine to Eastern Europe, the Baltics, to Taiwan as well, and of course I spent time living and working in China, everyone involved tells me that Xi watches Ukraine to see, one, what lessons he can learn on the battlefield with regard to a potential invasion of Taiwan, but also, crucially, how the world reacts and how the U.S. reacts. And when he sees weakness and division in his calculus, he can then say, well, maybe the cost of a Taiwan invasion will be lower than I imagine, and it makes it more thinkable. So the events in Ukraine are absolutely connected to potential events in Taiwan and Asia, and everyone I talk to makes that connection and say that he, Xi Jinping, is making that connection as well.
Jim Sciutto, congratulations on your book. That is so topical, such an important read for people right now trying to understand the impact and the global dynamics. Really appreciate you taking the time and joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the Trump takeover of the RNC is now complete. And this week, we got some big clues about what the committee's goals really are. I'll tell you about that when we come back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
This week marked the start of a new era at the Republican National Committee after Donald Trump and his allies pressured Chairwoman Ronna McDaniels to step down. The RNC then voted through Trump's handpicked leadership to head up the national party, including Michael Whatley, a full-blown election denier and former chair of the North Carolina Republican Party, as chairman and, don't forget, his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, as co-chair. Now, for some, like Trump surrogate Tim Scott, the shakeup couldn't be more exciting.
If there's anyone paying attention to the details of 2024, it's Donald Trump, who is now running, co-running the RNC. Laura Trump. Why? Because he understands that the devil's in the details. So he puts his brilliant daughter-in-law in charge of our RNC apparatus. You want the ball in the hands of the best player on the field. That player is Donald Trump. I can guarantee you we will win because we're coming together.
I've been doing this a while. Those are the words of a man who really wants to get on that ticket. I mean, really wants to be on the ticket. But the overall point that Senator Scott makes is right, because the RNC and the party have fallen now into the hands of Donald Trump. And the question is what that is going to entail. Well, this week we got a little bit of a hint. They added some notable new hires, specifically new lawyers focused on election-related concerns and what they are calling election integrity, which I'm putting in quotes because in practice, it actually means finding ways to limit voters' access to the ballot box. One of those lawyers is Bill McGinley, a longtime election attorney who also served as cabinet secretary in the Trump White House. The RNC hired him as outside counsel for their sham election integrity effort. To give you a sense of where this guy is coming from, in a leaked tape of an October 2020 meeting where Steve Bannon laid out the Trump plan to declare himself winner on election night, Bannon described McGinley as Rudy Giuliani's right-hand man. The RNC also hired Trump's former personal attorney, Christina Bob, you remember her, as senior counsel for election integrity. And she has also been a dedicated advocate, very dedicated, for Trump's election lies.
Joe Biden and the mainstream media continue their narrative that Biden won.
In 2020, I think Donald Trump won the election.
We will get Donald Trump back in office. And at that point, I think we need an investigation into who actually overthrew the United States government to install a fake president.
Yeah. There's no evidence of fraud. It was the most secure election in U.S. history. Those things have never been true. They were not true on November 3rd, 2020. They're certainly not true now.
So that is who the RNC under Trump is bringing in for senior leadership to do things on election integrity. Already, they have filed a new lawsuit against the state of Michigan in an effort to purge voter rolls. New hires, new lawsuits, more focus on what they're calling election integrity. It's becoming apparent that a Trump-run RNC is not actually about the traditional role of voter outreach and turnout. That's what they usually do. Instead, it's about suppressing the vote and planning ahead for how to keep Donald Trump in power. What the changes at the RNC show in part is that Trump and his allies are looking to use the organization as part of their effort to lay out a much more sophisticated and organized legal assault ahead of 2024. Up next, Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow is standing by for her exit interview. I have so many questions for her, and that conversation is coming up after a quick break. A few months ago, we kicked off our series, The Exit Interview, which is one of my favorite things because we talk with longtime lawmakers who are preparing to leave Washington. And my next guest is someone who will have some important insight, a lot of it, because she also represents a state that has been pivotal in deciding the outcome of presidential elections for decades. Senator Debbie Stabenow has represented Michigan in Congress for nearly 30 years. She was the first elected to the House in 1996, and 7 years later became the first woman elected to represent Michigan in the U.S. Senate. Last year, she made the surprising announcement that she would not seek re-election in November, which means she'll be leaving the Senate at the end of her term in January. Senator Debbie Stabenow joins me now. It is so great to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
And I'd say happy St. Patrick's
Day. Of course.
We're both in green.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. We do have to celebrate. Well, I want to talk all about your amazing career, but I do have to start with just something we've been talking about a little bit on the show. Former President Trump said last night at a rally in Ohio during a bizarre riff about the auto industry. You were from an auto state. He said, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. He claims it's about the auto industry, but I want to know what you thought when you heard those remarks. I mean, Michigan,
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I would say about the auto industry, this is somebody who said, let them go bankrupt. This is somebody, and I was in the middle of that, helping to make sure we had the auto rescue. This is somebody who said to the companies, why don't you go to the South with non-union employees? And then the people up in Michigan and other states will be begging to get their jobs back and they'll take less pay. This is a guy who a few months ago went in, paid people to be fake UAW workers in a non-union company to be able to say was with workers. So first of all, this is absurd. And which is why the UAW strongly supports President Biden. But the broader context is that if we don't understand that this guy likes violence by now, I don't know what to say. He relishes it. He watched January 6th and watched what was happening, because I think in his mind, if he can get people to commit violence, it translates to him as being power. And that's a pretty frightening thing.
Very frightening. Very clearly stated. And you did all the context there. I appreciate that. Okay, now you were first elected in 1974 to the county commission. You were just 24 years old.
I was.
You were then elected to Congress in 96. You made history in 2000, which I just said. Tell us, what has changed in Washington for the good and for the worse?
Well, the good thing is we have a lot more women, and I think in terms of priorities and decisions, it's better. Jen, I didn't realize that when I was going through it, but my career in politics really reflects the movement of women. Local government in the 70s, 24, my opponent referred to me as that young broad running against him. He tried to close a nursing home. I led an effort to keep it open. Young broad beat him. And then, but that was local government. 80s was state government. Women were coming into state legislatures, and that's what I did. In the 90s, it was women really running for the Senate in any large numbers. U.S. House, I ran for the House in 96, being an incumbent. But 2000 was the first year that after we won, this was Hillary Clinton, myself, a number of colleagues, where we had enough women to have one woman sitting on every committee in the United States Senate, 2001. Now, many of us chair committees, we're in leadership. And so even with chaos and the craziness, where you see leadership happening, it's often the women that are doing it.
You've seen the whole journey. Now, you've been a strong, so I would say, very much ahead of the curve advocate for mental health.
Yes, yes.
Which is something I feel like people have come around to. But talk to me a little bit about that and what you would like to kind of see happen next on that. That hasn't happened quite yet.
Well, we are on the way, Jen, and I think this is a moment to really lean in and explain what we have done. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, mental health services in the community are funded through grants that stop and start. So the grant goes away for addiction services, for mental health, the services go away, you try again. What we did in the gun bill a year and a half ago was to embrace a concept that Senator Roy Blunt and I have worked on for 10 years on a bipartisan basis to make community behavioral health services healthcare. So we are now leaning in. There are 10 states, 10 more being announced in June, that will get full Medicaid funding, just like health centers, and be fully reimbursed to help keep people out of jail, keep them out of hospitals, and to provide services. So this has been a long, long time in coming. I've said over and over again, healthcare above the neck should be funded the same as healthcare below the neck. And we are now on that journey.
What an amazing part of your legacy. In the 1 minute we have left, I know you said, as you're ready to prepare a new chapter that includes continuing to serve the state and, of course, spending time with your amazing 96-year-old mother, which is remarkable.
I know.
What are you most looking forward to?
Well,
what's your mother like?
Well, I have to tell you, my mom is retired as a nurse. You know, back when women were just getting started, you know, she got a 3-year degree. That's the most she could do at the time, to become a nurse, director of nursing at the small hospital in Clare, where I grew up. She's now 97. She's still the one who's telling me who won the MSU basketball game, who won the U of M basketball game, you know, cheering people on, rooting for her Tigers, who she loves, and the Detroit Lions. And she's amazing. It's a blessing for me. I want to have the opportunity to really be with her at this important time, as well as with my family. And I've got 5 absolutely the smartest, most beautiful grandkids in the world.
Well, it sounds like you're from a long line of fierce women, which I
am.
Love. Senator Chavanaugh, thank you for all of your time in office. You have more to go for all the work you've done on mental health. Say hello to your mother. Thanks
for
joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
And coming up next, a few thoughts from me and a little highlight reel as we mark the 1-year anniversary of this show. We're back after a quick break. So this weekend marks 1 year since the launch of our show. It's very hard to believe. It's been quite a year. These days, you have so many options for where you get your news. And for you to let us into your homes each week is a privilege that we never take for granted. We hope that you'll keep joining us, because as crazy as this past year was, there is very little doubt in my mind that the year ahead is going to be even crazier. And we'll be here right with you, doing our best to make sense of it all. So as we enter for today, here's a look back at a year that I will never forget. So we picked a hell of a week to launch a new show. Joining me now is the House Speaker, Emerita Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, former Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Ken Buck of Colorado, comedian Jordan Klepper, Cassidy Hutchinson, Senator Bernie Sanders, Eric Holder. Leader Jeffries, thank you so much for being my first guest on my first show. We've heard a lot of talk about certain elections being the most consequential of our lifetimes, but this one actually kind of feels like it is. Joe Biden and Democrats should not be on their heels right now. They can and should play offense on every single issue I just mentioned.
Conversations about politics are happening on every platform that you could possibly imagine, and some that you possibly couldn't.
Do you think she would be receiving these same critiques if she was a white man?
No.
Despite what Donald Trump says on the campaign trail and wants his followers to believe, it's important to remember that he is not the victim here. I'm of the view we have to talk about the crazy things he's doing, even if we're tired of it.
He should never have been in the White House and should never be there again.
A president who's willing to do the things we've watched him do before certainly will do those things again.
He engages in what psychologists call projection. So whenever he accuses somebody else of doing something, it's almost guaranteed he's doing it himself or he's already done it.
Lordy, it's a good thing that there are tapes.
Turns out it's an evergreen statement. And while Donald Trump may believe that he lives by a different set of rules, this indictment is a heartening sign that justice still matters in this country.
If you can't win in November, then you shouldn't even be, we shouldn't even be in the discussion,
so
and he can't
you
win.
You think the best argument is he's a loser?
Yes.
He is choosing to side with the extremists.
It's shameful. They're shameful. And it should shock our souls.
Their agenda is dysfunction. That's the whole point.
To use your phrase, Jen, at the beginning of this show, I am officially now at the freakout stage.
Sooner or later, this drama has to end.
We are witnessing an all-out assault on our democracy.
If you can't explain it and people don't understand it in 15 seconds, it may not be the winning message you think it is. Guys, are you all okay? Seriously, shake it off, as she would say. Whether it's called Moms for Liberty or Puppies for Ice Cream, it's worth looking into the agenda of an organization before joining it. We can say for the first time that Jessica Mackler is the new official president of Emily's List. What do you hope when people look back at your legacy of public service?
I'm not going to worry about my legacy. I'm going to worry about the planet.
You came here when you were 7 years old with your mom and your brother. You were an undocumented immigrant.
I grew up hiking this park.
Your parents took you hiking?
Yes.
If they wanted to be pro-baby, maybe they should stop opposing new child care and parental leave programs or food stamps for low-income women and young children. I could go on.
If everybody in this world reaches one person, then we're all going to be okay.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.